It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Temple Grandin is known around the world for her extraordinary understanding of animal behavior. She has transformed the way that we slaughter cattle. In fact, half of the cattle in the United States and Canada are processed in humane handling systems that she designed for meat plants. She's also an activist, raising awareness and advocating for the rights of people on the autism spectrum. She's written a number of best-selling books, including Thinking in Pictures, Animals in Translation. Her most recent book is The Autistic Brain, Thinking Across the Spectrum. She is a professor of animal science at Colorado State University, and she'll be speaking at Iowa State University Thursday night at the Great Hall of the Memorial Union. The lecture is free and open to the public. It's at 7 p.m., and she is with me on the line now. Hello, Temple.
How are you doing?
Great. Thank you so much for being here today. And for people who are not as familiar with your work, I know that you've told these stories many times, but I would love for you to help us understand a little bit about how you see the world, because it's how you see the world that helps you understand animal behavior so well. And one of the things is that you can see the world in pictures. You have an understanding that doesn't require language. Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, if you want to understand animals, you need to get away from language. Everything I think about is a picture. I don't think in words. Words narrate the pictures in my imagination. In fact, as we talk about it right now, I'm seeing the cover of my book, Thinking in Pictures, because I have to have a visual image in order to think. So in animals' world, and it doesn't matter whether it's cattle, pigs, or dog, they're going to store their memories as sensory. Pictures. Dogs will be very much into smell. Maybe cattle are afraid, or a horse are afraid of a certain sound. Animals will often get afraid of something they were either looking at or hearing right when a scary thing happened. In my book, Animals in Translation, I described the black hat horse, and he was abused during a veterinary procedure, so he became afraid of people wearing black cowboy hats. If they had on a white cowboy hat, they were just fine, because the animal made a visual picture of the thing he was afraid of. It's specific. It's not generalized.
And I remember learning in various psychology classes, things like that over the years, about the debate over whether animals could think or not. And one of the main arguments from the perspective of people who say animals can't think was that they don't have language and we use language to think. Did you run into that idea when you were studying?
Oh, absolutely, I did. Well, then I'm going to have to assume that I can't think. I've designed a lot of equipment. And when I design the equipment, I kind of test run it in my head, and I visualize it as I draw it. When I started doing my first work in animal behavior, I noticed cattle would, when they went to a handling facility, they'd balk at a shadow, they'd balk at a chain hanging down, a reflection off a vehicle. And when I point those things out to people, people see it. But until I point them out, some people, especially if they're really verbal, have a hard time seeing it. And there is evidence that animals can think, because thinking is solving problems under new novel conditions. There's some very interesting work done in crows, where a crow figures out how to take a stick and stick it down in this little tube and snag a treat that he wants.
When we make that argument that maybe animals can't think because they don't have the language, that also then would apply to many people on the autism spectrum, because many people on the autism spectrum have a difficult time acquiring language. I can't imagine how frustrating that must be for someone after they've acquired the language to learn that so many people's theory of mind is connected to something that they didn't have access to.
Well, you see, there's a lot of people think you have to have language for thinking. You've got to have language in order to have feelings. Animals live in a sensory-based world. I think it's just ridiculous to say that, you know, they cannot think. And I think it gets down to language-based thought versus visual thinking. And in the autism world, in fact, a lot of gifted people, you can have someone who's a visual thinker like me, kind of careers they'll be good at is design and art. Then you have a person who is the visual-spatial a mathematical thinker. It's pattern thinking instead of pictures. I think in photorealistic pictures. And there's actual scientific research, and it's in my book, The Autistic Brain, that you can have an object photorealistic visual thinker like me. You can have a pattern mathematical thinker. And then there's also people that think pretty much in words. And a lot of people are combinations of the different kinds of thinking. And when I first started out, I thought everybody thought in pictures like me. Well, it was I finally learned that that's not the case.
And it took quite a while to realize that other people were thinking in different ways, didn't it?
Well, that's right. And I thought, you know, until you start questioning how other people think. And in education, there's a lot of overgeneralization with very verbal-based theories. And I'm getting worried that our kids that are visual thinkers are going to get left out. We're going to need our visual thinkers. We've got a huge shortage in skilled trades. And this brings up another book I have, Calling All Minds, where kids can learn about famous inventors and also just do some of the projects I made as kids. Kids don't make things anymore. They don't make stuff and just figure out how to do something simple, like make a paper airplane work. You got a lot of kids today never even made a paper airplane. Also, they don't know how to tinker and just make mistakes. And that's addressed in Calling All Minds. And that doesn't apply just to people with autism, but maybe the kids that are dyslexic or the kids that get some other special ed label.
You, like many people on the autism spectrum, you acquired language a little bit later than other children. I'm curious, and maybe this isn't something that you can remember because you were such a young child, but as you were learning to put words to your ideas, was it difficult for you to make that connection since you were such a visual thinker? Difficult to put those ideas into language?
Well, I just learned, okay, dog's a dog. So when I was a little kid, dogs were Labrador Retrievers, Golden Retrievers, a German Shepherd, or an Airedale, because those are the dogs we have in the neighborhood. And gradually other dogs came into the neighborhood, and I could no longer sort the dogs by size when dogs from horses, by size when a dachshund came into the neighborhood. And she was the same size as a cat. I used to sort cats, dogs, and horses by size. And then I had to figure out what sensory-based feature does a dachshund share with other dogs. She barks, she smells like a dog, and she has the same nose shape. You know, I basically see pictures. You know, now I'm seeing the dachshund. Now I'm seeing my assistant's dogs. They come up sort of just the way the HBO movie shows it. They kind of come up like a series of PowerPoint slides that I can click through.
I feel like we've learned so much about autism in recent years, and we certainly are diagnosing autism more often, and there's a debate that could be made about whether we're in the midst of an epidemic or whether that's also driven by diagnosis or both.
I think some of it's driven by diagnosis. I worked with a lot of skilled, very quirky tradespeople on some of the big projects I did at the beef plants. And those kids today are kind of getting shunted into special ed because they don't have a welding class anymore. You wouldn't have a radio station to talk on if it wasn't for autism genetics. Because the people who are interested in building a radio station to start with are not the people that do the talking in the radio station. You've got an engineer back there that's got to keep your station running. And a lot of those people are probably mildly on the autism spectrum.
I'm curious how you feel about the diagnosis of autism, because the spectrum is so broad. How useful is it to have this diagnosis?
Well, there's a problem because half of Silicon Valley programmers probably have mild autism. And then the spectrum goes all the way to somebody who can't dress themselves, all got the same name. And I'm getting worried where a lot of geeky, nerdy kids today are letting the diagnosis become their total identity. Well, I'd rather have the identity be musician, artist, clever person who builds things out of metal. You know, for me, being a college professor comes first and the autism is second. And when I was first starting my career, a movie showed those cattle pens. And I was putting cattle pens on myself because the cattle came first.
The diagnosis of autism, I mean, we have these ideas about it, those of us who are not intimately acquainted or related to someone on the spectrum. There is...
You know, you're getting too hung up. I think you're one of the reasons you're in radio is because you're verbal. You know,
that's
I don't get hung up on
so true.
Going, okay, the kid's 6 years old. Can he talk? What's he good at? Now, basically in autism, some of the social circuits aren't hooked up, but maybe the music, math, or art circuits are really hooked up. So let's build up on that. We got to teach him social skills like he's in a foreign country. I'm talking to many granddads that come up to me and find out they're on the autism spectrum who have had a successful career, because my generation was taught social skills in a much more systematic way. In fact, after I do this call, we're going to be having a seminar just on how to greet people at interviews, because even the normal kids are not getting this. It hurts the autistic kids a lot more. Take the thing the kid's good at and expand on it.
So what I'm curious about, I mean, we've made a lot of progress, but we still have so many people on the autism spectrum who
Always had them.
Right.
On the mild end of the spectrum, they've always been there.
But who cannot get work. And I'm curious, where have we failed that these people who have skills can't work?
We've taken all the skilled trades out of the schools in some districts, taken art out, taken theater out, all the kinds of things that the music, things where these kids could get jobs. And we have a huge shortage of skilled trades, things like plumbers, electricians, welders who can read blueprints, you know, the highly skilled trades. I worked with people back in the 90s when I was out in construction projects all the time that as kids, they would have been on the autism spectrum or dyslexic or ADHD.
So what do you think we can do? How can we fix this problem?
Well, kids have got to learn how to work. That's another very big problem. That needs to start around 11 years old with volunteer jobs. Instant illegal, they need to get jobs just so they learn how to show up on time and work and learn that skill before they graduate from high school.
If we don't have programs in place to teach them, then how are they going to gain those skills? I mean, do you think that this is something that our schools need to revisit?
I think there's some real problems with this. And maybe there's a lot of retirees around. Maybe we need to get retired auto mechanic to set up a shop in his garage and teach the neighborhood kids how to fix cars or how to do some other skill. Because I have been in three hotels in the last year in major cities where the water system failed. And it was due to the infrastructure failing out in the street. That used to never happen before.
You have been spending a lot of time and writing and thinking and speaking about the autism spectrum and advocating for people on the autism spectrum. It feels like there is a real movement growing. What do you feel good about with that right now?
Well, I think it's good, and I want to see kids get out there and be successful and not have their whole identity just become the fact that they're autism spectrum. Because I know people that own metal fabrication companies and businesses that have, and we've discussed it, where when they were a kid, they would have had a diagnosis. You see, the problem we've got now is you're going from somebody who's very severely challenged with very big handicaps, maybe can't talk, can't dress themselves, to somebody who ought to be working in Silicon Valley, and instead they're playing video games in the basement. We've got to control the video game addictions.
You are a professor in the animal science department at Colorado State University. You're still actively teaching students in animal science. You're also spending a lot of time, as I mentioned, traveling and giving these speeches, both on animal behavior, but also on autism. Do you find time to do your work now?
Well, it's Tuesday and my class is today, so I'm at the college today because got to teach my class.
Do you feel like you're pulled in too many directions?
Well, I kind of like doing a variety of different things. I mean, I just recently went to horse sale, and then just the other day I was doing a talk at autism on NIH, and then I might go to the beef plant. I kind of like jumping back and forth between the different silos because I want to see these kids that are different get out and be successful. And then when I go over to the beef plant, I find out they're short on maintenance people. They can't get them. And they can't find the tinkerers who are good at just fixing just about anything.
You have made such a tremendous impact in livestock handling systems. Are you surprised that these ideas have spread so far?
Well, people always ask me about single breakthroughs, either in autism or in livestock handling. You know, to make a difference requires long, hard, sustained work. Another thing I want to tell students today, learn how to have good writing skills. We're getting students today that have a lot of problems with writing skills. And no matter what job you're in, good writing skills are going to really help you out.
What do you feel like your most important goal is right now? Again, we talked about how you're doing so many different things and enjoying that. But what do you feel like your most important mission is?
If I can help the kids that are quirky and different, whether they have a label or not, get out there and be successful, that's really important. There's a lot of different things that they could be successful in. One of the problems with taking so many of the hands-on classes, sewing, cooking, woodworking, metalworking, auto shop, music, theater, things like that out of the schools, is kids are not getting exposed to enough things to even figure out what they might want to do for a career. And I'm seeing too many kids that ought to become, an artist. Maybe, theater's not going to go away, do a skilled trade. And these are good jobs that are not going to get replaced by computers. I've been watching the computer revolution on what's going to get replaced by artificial intelligence. It's going to be that cancer doctor or that dermatologist or that radiologist. That job's going to get replaced by computers. Plumbing is not going to get replaced by computers.
Temple Grandin, thank you so much for talking with me today.
Okay, it's been absolutely wonderful to talk to you. And really looking forward to coming to Iowa. You might have heard that ding. That was my airline telling me to check in now for my flight.
All right. Well, I'll let you go and safe travels.
Okay. Good to talk to you.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah. Bye.
Temple Grandin is an animal scientist and a best-selling author. She'll be speaking tonight in Des Moines at the Ron Pearson Center at 5:30. Tickets are still available for that event. She'll also be in Ames tomorrow evening at Iowa State University. She'll be giving a lecture in the Great Hall of the Memorial Union at 7 p.m. on Thursday. That lecture is free and open to the public. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbie.